Hi, I'm Polly. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I'm moving house at the moment, as I keep going boning on about, because it's sort of like ruling my life. Another couple of days and I'm there. And this morning I had planned, very foolishly, to have the plumber, the roofer and St. Vincent de Paul's come at exactly the same time. And I had half a face of makeup on. And I came to I opened the door and these guys are like, I look like a clown. Half my face had foundation on, the other half didn't. Just another day in the life. You know, one of the things when I was buying my house is that I wanted to make sure was that my animals were going to be okay. So I have a rescue pup who was rescued actually by a woman who was in Gisborne at the time. So she was from Wainuiomata and she was in Gisborne and she saw these kids with this tiny puppy basically torturing this puppy. She stopped on the side of the road. She said, "Oi, give me that effing dog." Took the tiny puppy, brought it back to Wellington. My partner at the time was working on her house. She said, "Hey, I can't have a puppy. Would you like this little tiny puppy?" And he went, "Okay." And so we got her. And she is just this most sensitive, beautiful little dog. She looks like a tiny German shepherd, but she's special. She's a special needs dog. She doesn't like little children. She remembers that. So I've got her. Then I've got a cat called Valentina, who is a red ginger girl, which is quite rare. She's actually not my cat. She's my daughter's cat. But when they leave home, they leave cats. So when I was looking for a new house, it was really important that I could house my animals. And some real estate agent said to me, "Oh, you know what, you just like take them to, you know, Cat Protection or SPCA or whatever, you know, if you want an apartment." And I went, "I'm not that person. I am not that person." It would have been easier to be that person. It would have been way easier. I could have rented for a while and then bought a house, but I had to buy a house pretty quickly after I sold my house so that I had a house, but also because I'm not that person. And I'm not judging people who do give up their animals for accommodation, because we live in that world now where it's very hard to feed ourselves, a lot of us. But I couldn't do it. So I ended up buying a little house where I can have my dog and my cat, my menagerie. But animals. I was going to say animals are people too. This man you're about to meet is a doctor. Not one that can write a script, I don't think, unfortunately. Hey. But he's an incredible man. Steve Glassy, Dr. Steve Glassy. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Polly.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to that whole spiel about my life and my animals. But you are, you've been involved with animals for how long now?
Oh, for many years, probably a good 40 years. Maybe 35, let's be generous.
So you would have been a tiny child.
Yes.
Tiny child. And now you have Animal Evac. Well, you're certainly one of the patrons, one of the people who started it up. Let's start from the beginning, though. So when did you get... You were with the SPCA for a long time, weren't you?
Yeah, look, I actually started my whole journey as a volunteer at the SPCA in Palmerston North when I was 13.
Wow.
In the days we didn't have health and safety legislation, so I could just...
Of course you could. You
could. Of course we could.
Child labour, it's fine.
Here's a 13-year-old, there's no training, no experience with dogs, wants to work with dogs, what could possibly go wrong?
And was it dogs? Mostly dogs?
It was, because I wasn't allowed a dog as a child. Mm. So...
Same.
Really?
Yeah, same. Yeah.
So that was my fix, was to go and volunteer at the SPCA in Palmy. And from that's really stemmed an interest in helping animals. And I came back to Wellington after a short stint in the Navy to become an SPCA inspector in here in Wellington.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was back in 1995, I think it was.
Oh, my goodness.
So I was the youngest inspector ever to be appointed as an inspector for the SPCA in New Zealand.
Yeah.
On my 18th birthday, they gave me a warrant.
Oh, my goodness.
Again, policies at the time were probably quite different.
I imagine they would have. Now, I don't know about an 18-year-old being a dog inspector.
Yeah, I look back and think, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
That's, you know, I was an SPCA inspector for a number of years here in Wellington. And in parallel to that, I also, when I was at high school, they had a civil defence rescue program for
kids. Yeah, I know, Grant. My ex-husband did that. Yeah, because
they had a program here in Wellington and in Palmy.
Yeah,
it was a great program. So I ended up actually merging my animal interest with my rescue interest. And after doing a couple of rescues, I remember there was a pigeon that jumped off the wharf at Queen's Wharf that I jumped in afterwards.
A pigeon?
A pigeon, yes.
What do baby pigeons look like? Can I just ask? Because you never see baby pigeons.
Actually, it's a good point. I don't think I've actually been involved with rescuing baby pigeons.
But I wonder if they're big when they're born or something. Or if they kind of like, they hide until they get to a certain age. Because I've never seen a little pigeon. They're all exactly the same size.
That is a very good point. These are the kinds of issues that we should really delve into.
We really need to know what baby. But so you dived into Queen's Wharf to save a pigeon, which a lot of people would go, oh my God, Wellington and pigeons. Oh, let it go, you know.
Yeah, well, there was a whole lot of bystanders just watching me thinking, ah, what will this SPCA guy do after the pigeon jumps off the Helipro landing area into the sea having their lunch? So I did the honourable thing and
good on you.
Took off my shirt and... And back then it was more like a Baywatch sort of moment, really, me sort of taking off the shirt. There were a few broken hearts.
I'm sure.
Through that and some other incidents, I ended up forming the Wellington SPCA Animal Rescue Unit. And that was a team that did all the rope rescue and abseiling rescues and stuff. And that morphed over a number of years. I worked in public safety, including the fire service and emergency management agencies. And I ended up coming back as the chief executive for Wellington SPCA prior to the national merger. Yeah.
And is it in that wonderful house?
In the
up
beautiful
on the
old Fever Hospital. What a
beautiful place.
Building. Yeah. So that was really cool. We got to host a number of really amazing VIPs there, et cetera. And when I was there, I helped to sort of restore the animal rescue unit and give it more resources and funding, etc. And that led into the Edgecombe flood in 2017.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah. So at the time, there was no agency or organisation was mandated to do animal rescues and disasters.
No, it's probably the last thing that the news centres on. You know, it's like all these people standing on roofs and everything, but the animals, I've often wondered, I've thought, oh God, how many people lost their animals and, you know.
Oh, and look, even thinking back to the Kaikoura earthquake.
Oh, of course,
The only thing the world news was interested to know about wasn't whether the people were okay. They wanted to know what was going to happen to those three cows.
That's right.
The three cows standing up.
The three cows.
So you know, look at the Australian bushfires and you've seen those koalas being rescued.
Yeah.
You know, animals are always... depicted in disasters as needing help. And I think that this is where Animal Evac came in, is because the Edgecombe floods, you know, there was no real agency taking the didn't have the capability.
No, and I guess, some people, you know, like as I was mentioning earlier, some people think of animals as accessories, you know, these animals don't match my life right now. And so I guess when it comes to disasters, they haven't in the past been a priority, really. It's been like, oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
And that's that selectivism of, oh, my God, I can't believe that. Those poor animals. Okay, what's the next news item, you know?
Yeah.
But actually, what does happen to them? And what do you do? I guess that's the thing. It's like your animal evac. So what happens?
Well, I think, look, as you mentioned, look, society has changed, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I mean, in fact, I remember going through a Hutt City Council emergency management plan that was developed or written in about 1991, 1992.
Wow.
And it said in a disaster, pets will compete for food with humans. So one of the options was to destroy all pets.
No.
Yes.
Are
this
you
is
serious?
In 1992. Now, I don't know about you, but if I've got a bag of Hill Science Diet, dog can keep it.
Absolutely.
It's theirs.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had these sort of quite sort of draconian Cold War kind of approaches. And it didn't really take in consideration what we'd call value-based emergency management, which is saying, well, what do communities value?
Yeah.
And look, 99% of families in New Zealand identify pets as part of their family.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's why, you know, pet owners will act paternally to protect their pets. They will refuse to evacuate unless they can take it. It happened in Hurricane Katrina 2005.
Oh, God.
44% of those who chose to stay behind in Hurricane Katrina did so because they weren't allowed to take their pets.
That's the thing. But as I was saying earlier,
yeah,
a lot of people now, and I know this is slightly off subject, but we're told, and we know that animals, oh my God, they are such emotional support for us, and beautiful creatures. And we're told we should have them, but then when people go to rent houses, they can't. It's sort of like, what a horrible situation to be in.
At Macca's, you can join a team that loves spearfishing, jamming, karate, and surf lifesaving, just to name a few. Apply now and find your crew. Search Macca's Careers today.
You know, like, disaster aside, it's awful, you know, because people are attached to their animal friends. They're so attached.
Oh, and pet loss, you know, loss, you know, there's been numerous studies. There was a study by Melissa Hunt, a psychologist in the US, and she looked at Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
And she said people that lost their pets were just as likely to suffer from PTSD.
Wow.
With losing losing their home.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we know that in time and time, you know, pet loss is a huge impact. So if we fast forward to Edgecombe, 1 in 5 households lost a family member. They lost a pet.
Wow.
And even a year or so after that event, I did some research in conjunction with Otago University. You know, there were people that were still saying that they were having nightmares. You know, there was an emergency service worker who said it was one of the worst days of their life. He was still having nightmares. So it's also not fair for us to expect emergency workers to be put in that situation where they have to make that horrible decision.
That call, yeah.
So it's about having good plans in place. It's about having good laws in place that actually make sure that animals, in particular the companion animals, because of that strong human-animal bond, are treated seriously. I mean, in the US, a year after Hurricane Katrina, they passed specific legislation in their national or their federal disaster management laws that mandated funding to ensure that companion animals, including service dogs, were cared for, rescued. There was plans, there was funding. We haven't made that change. So
if for instance, people with service animals, right, for whatever reason, if there was a disaster, what in God's name would they do? If, you know, like, I'm imagining this, you know, a blind person with a Labrador, because that's what you normally think of. What happens? What happens if they lose their service animal?
Well, that's a good point. Actually, one of the things that I worked on was the Civil Defence Disability Assistance Dog Tag. So the Civil Defence logo is afforded regulatory protection. So it can't be used unless you've got authority to use the Civil Defence logo. So we use the Civil Defence logo on essentially a metal disc that has disability assistance dogs. So all the different types of assistance dogs, from mobility to autism, epilepsy, guide, hearing, etc., they all have this one common identification that they can use. There's some good protections in place, but actually one of the concerns that's been raised is that it's not illegal to impersonate an assistance dog.
Wow.
So it means that people can go onto eBay, they can go onto Amazon
and get a fake one
and just order what they want and then just purport that their dog is a legitimate service dog. Which is really quite concerning.
So, it amazes me the depths which people plunge to do things. It's like getting multiple vaccines under other people's names. I'm like, who are these people? The other thing too is with the disc, I mean, I understand that, but I mean, a dog's not going to go, hey, look, I've got a disc. You know, so that you've got to rely then on the rescuers to recognise, you know, and look for that disc, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So the idea of using the Civil Defence logo, and this is one of the questions that hasn't been answered. We've got this new Emergency Management Bill, and that legislation would control insignias and logos, such as the Civil Defence logo. And I was speaking to one of the service dog associations or one of the service dog groups the other day, and they've said they haven't heard, they haven't been consulted about any change. So it's sort of interesting that we've got this new legislation which could change the logo, maybe, if we're moving away from Civil Defence to Emergency Management. Will there be a new logo? And that very logo that's used to protect existing service dogs in New Zealand, those user groups haven't even had the been invited to the conversation. It just sort of throws up some opportunities for us to make sure that the laws are inclusive of animals, but also people of determination that rely on these dogs, because it means for the rescuer, if they do come across that dog, they can see the Civil Defence logo, they know that, well, this must be legit, this must be something to do with Civil Defence, right,
you'd hope so.
And so then they know that there's a priority to reunify that dog with its handler. And it also means that it was originally brought in because in the Nelson floods back after the Christchurch earthquake, there was a bona fide user of an assistance dog that was refused access into a welfare centre.
Because they had a service dog?
Yeah, because there was no no identification. There was no common ID. So all the different service dogs or disability assistance dogs have different ID systems.
That's crazy.
So that makes it really also hard for if you own a restaurant or a cafe and someone comes and says, this is my service dog.
But you don't look blind.
That's it. It could be there for someone's PTSD. It could be there
absolutely
for epilepsy.
Epilepsy. I spoke to a woman who wrote a book about service dogs and what they're used for and how incredibly instinctive they are. Mm. You know, they can often sense a fit, guide someone to a bed or to a couch. They are amazing animals and so intuitive.
Yeah, and that's why it's really important. You know, one of the things that we're trying to sort of advocate is that many parts of the Emergency Management Bill can have benefits to other legislation, like the Dog Control
Act.
So then we can make sure that those that are vulnerable in disasters are actually going to be better protected. So what we're championing is not necessarily let's just save animals, but actually understand the link, because what we're trying to achieve is actually saving animals and people.
And the thing is, it should be simple.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to be like the United States, where 50 states have 50 different laws, which when you were saying how different, you know, different groups have, you know, different IDs and logos and systems, it doesn't work in America, so it won't work for animals either. There's got to be one simple system, surely.
And that's it. So leaving it to local authorities to have their own local determinations, not ideal. So this is where for us to have changes to the Emergency Management Bill, the bill's at a national level, and we know that unless it's put into the Act, nothing gets done or funded.
So what do you do? So you're talking to me. I know you've spoken with Duncan.
Sure.
How do we make sure it happens?
Well, there's a few things. At the moment, our campaign, which is No Animal Left Behind, is really encouraging everyday New Zealanders to have their say. Basically go to our website, noanimalleftbehind.nz, and read through what we're suggesting. People can make up their own decisions of what aspects they support or don't support, and make a submission to the select committee who's hearing on the draft Emergency Management Bill.
When is that? What date? Do you know?
Well, it closes off in November.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll be seeing a new government in. So it's actually a really good opportunity for us and everyone to actually ask those that are standing for Parliament, saying, hey, you know, what's your thoughts? What's your position on this? You know, ask them, you know, would they leave their pets behind? And as you say, what kind of person would?
Well, I mean, it affects, I was being completely truthful. I couldn't buy an apartment. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't buy somewhere where it wasn't safe for animals. You know, it's just, they are so important. And even like, I like to pretend, you know, that I'm, you know, oh, it's fine. You know, but I'm so emo about them, you know. I always go, I love people more than animals. And then I'm like, buy a house based on a little rescue pub and a strange cat. Can I just take you back to when you were 13 for a minute?
Sure.
So you weren't allowed a dog as a kid, right?
No, but I had a cat.
You had a cat. It's like you can't have a dog, you can have a cat.
Yes.
My cat hated me. Well, it wasn't really my cat. It was my sister's cat. And he used to wait and pounce on me. Didn't really like me very much. Fair enough. So we got cats. So you got involved with SPCA so that you could, you know, be around dogs.
Yeah.
When did you get your first dog?
I got my first dog 10 years ago.
No.
So, yeah, it took a long time because I also wanted to be myself in the right position and environment to actually have a dog.
Yeah, well, that's smart.
So I managed to convince my wife to get a dog. She was not very keen on getting a big dog.
Yeah.
But now she loves that dog.
What sort of dog?
It's a long-haired German Shepherd. His name is Diesel. He was just a big cuddly bear. And so, look, I know that if we had to evacuate and there was only one seat on that truck, you know, heading out of town,
it'd be Diesel, not you.
It'd be Diesel. And look, I'd be comfortable with that, right?
That's so cute.
So yeah, we all love our pets. So this is just about trying to get the laws to meet, you know, modern day societal expectations that you know, pets are part of the family. And yeah.
And you're while you were rescuing animals, when you were out actually, you know, in the field doing it, and I imagine you probably still are, what surprised you the most? Was it, I mean, I guess, what do you find when you go out looking? Is it people phoning you going, I can't find my dog? Mm. Or do you just go out going, there are going to be animals that are in trouble, we're going to go get them?
Yeah, look, Edgecombe's was really the catalyst for me. And in fact, actually, it was the catalyst for me to actually move on from the SPCA and actually do my PhD in animal disaster management.
Who knew? Do you want, if you know what, it's my podcast, if you want a drink of water, go for your life. I'm sitting here drinking water. You did your PhD in animal rescue management.
Yeah. And specifically in New Zealand, looking at companion animal emergency management, like the laws, the case studies, so Edgecombe, the Nelson fires. I did a field trip to the US following Hurricane Harvey in Texas and looked at you know, how they went after that massive event there, and just seeing the contrast and change between in the US because of the legislation they brought in.
It's crazy in America. You can't get them to agree on anything, but apparently you can get them to agree on animals.
You know
it
what?
It might be the one common denominator.
You're absolutely right. You know, when they passed the Pets Act a year after Hurricane Katrina, it was something like 340 votes to 20.
That never happens in America. It's so bipartisan. And yet, isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
If America could do it, then we certainly better, you know, pick up our game.
At Macca's, you can join a team that loves spearfishing, jamming, karate, and surf lifesaving, just to name a few. Apply now and find your crew. Search Macca's Careers today.
When you've gone out, you only got a dog 10 years ago, which is really interesting. So did what you saw, did that make you, I don't know, did it make you sad or scared to have your own animal?
No, it doesn't. Look, I think when I look back to Edgecombe, that was our mini, it was a very mini Katrina.
It was big though.
If we hadn't done the rescue operation. So this was at a time where even the National Fire Service, the New Zealand Fire Service at the time, didn't actually have a mandate for flood or animal rescue. So they didn't have the equipment or the training. So they provided some support like decontamination, because this flood water was full of sewage, paint, everything.
Everything, eh? Yeah.
And so they were fantastic like that, but they didn't actually have anyone trained to actually go into the flood water. Ironically, the SPCA team here, I'd put through training for flood rescue. So it was kind of weird that back in 2017, the SPCA had a team of better trained people in flood rescue than probably many agencies in New Zealand. But now things have changed. You know, Fire Service, you know, the new Fire and Emergency New Zealand, they've got some mandate. They've got an assistance mandate. And they've started some swift water training, which is absolutely fantastic. And the recent, you know, cyclones and
I was
floods,
gonna ask you about
they
that.
Were out there rescuing lots of animals. And that was really warming to see. But they're still quite in the infancy of that capability, and they're not funded for it, and they're not even mandated for it.
Well, see, that's the thing. So if, let's say something happened, and as we have discovered in the last few years, crazy things can happen. You can have an earthquake in Christchurch. You can have our East Coast decimated, cyclones in Auckland. And so who do you call? I mean, like, who do you call? It sounds like a Ghostbusters thing. But, you know, like, how do we know who to bring in? do they immediately, who funds you? Does the council fund you and go, hey, Dr. Steve, we need you?
Yeah, well, actually, with Animal Evac, what we've sort of found since forming 5 years ago is that it's a big demand on volunteers. And to be honest, it's not sustainable. You know, there's a lot of disaster happening every few weeks now. It'll be a flood, a cyclone, and, there has to be a point where we say, are we actually preventing this, or are we just part of responding and not addressing the root cause?
Right, again, the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff.
And I think that's where we've made, we've made the decision after seeing Fens do such a great job, we're starting to see, we were set up because no one was doing it. People are doing it. They need some support to do it. They need better support to do what they're doing. So we've sort of stepped back and said, you know what, we're not going to be part of just essentially making money out of animals' misery.
Yeah.
We actually want to prevent all this misery from happening at the beginning. And that starts with good policy and law. So we've basically moved away from doing the response. We're focusing on preventing. Just recently, only a couple of weeks ago, we donated a whole range of dog life jackets and muzzles to the Foreign Emergency New Zealand specialist teams so that when they do go out and do the good work that they have been doing, they've got some tools to actually, keep them safe and also take away, the risk of what they are doing in terms of handling animals that are stressed.
Yeah, well, that's the thing too, because like humans, who are drowning, you can behave very poorly or very badly or under duress and stress. My father was in the fire service, and so I don't think he would have ever thought one day I might have to go and rescue animals from a flood. So people now going into the services, like the fire service, they realise that that may be part of what they do.
Yeah, and I think that, look worldwide, we had Craig Fugate, who is the director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, come to one of our reports that we presented at Parliament in 2019 with Gareth Hughes. And he's probably one of the most experienced emergency managers in the world. And he's managed 200 presidential emergencies in the US. He came in and just said, look, we made the changes. Our urban search and rescue teams go out and they rescue people and pets. Sometimes they come back just with pets because they know that if they leave the pets behind, the people just go back. They break the cordons. And we found in Edgecombe, very similar to international studies, 40% of households attempted to breach the cordon to go back for their pets.
I'm just trying to think what I would do. You'd have to. Isn't that awful?
You would.
Because I would, if I didn't, I would have to live, imagining for the rest of my life. Imagine, was she under, what was happening to her? Was she distressed? Of course she'd be distressed. So I guess a lot of us would break the cordon to go there.
And we saw that in Christchurch. We saw it in Edgecombe. We saw it in Nelson. So we know this does happen. And so good emergency planning hopefully prevents that. And that sort of planning starts with laws that enable or mandate this to occur. So currently in the existing legislation, there are principles that animals have evacuated alongside people.
Sort of like, oh, it'd be nice.
It'd be nice.
It'd be really nice if... Yeah.
But there's no... Right. It's not enforceable. Principles aren't enforceable. Whereas in the US, it's like, actually, if you want federal funding for your disaster, you have to have a plan. That plan has to accommodate and rescue and transport animals. So animals are allowed on public transportation, for example, during evacuations. But here, not so much. But this is, even though we're a little bit behind the eight ball, in terms of our plans, our legislation, we've got this amazing opportunity to actually make New Zealand world leading. Because we like to say that we're world leading. But actually,
If
you look at animal welfare on the international scale, the Animal Protection Index, we're a C. We're on par with India and Mexico for animal welfare.
How has that happened? Is it just because we always think, oh, we'll be right? We'll be right.
Well, I think to some degree we've believed, that we are we're better than what we are.
God's own country.
Until we get measured against a standard. But this is a prime opportunity. We've had all these disasters.
Yeah.
We've got this massive reform within emergency management. We've got a change in government. Either way, this is a great opportunity for New Zealand to actually create model legislation that other countries can model.
Which would be great. It would be great for us to come first in something.
Absolutely.
It would be great to come first in something. It's interesting that you're not going to let this go. I can see it on your face. I can see it in your eyes. I can hear it in your words. It's like this is, you're very impassioned by it. And if we can do something, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could change the world in a small way?
Look, Animal Evac also is the host of the largest online animal disaster management conference in the world. So we just recently had GADMAC, we call it GADMAC, the Global Animal Disaster Management Conference, 2023. We had over 2,500 people register for the conference. We had speakers from probably 30, 40 different countries.
Wow.
Next time we run it, it's going to be with live captioning so that presenters can present in their own native language.
With subtitles.
All the videos, all the presentations are recorded so people can see them on YouTube. So this is where we're trying to position ourselves to be not just turning up for the hero stuff.
Yeah.
We're doing the boring stuff that actually saves more animal lives.
That's what people, and this is what I was talking about, selectivism, where we all will look at a video, I won't because I can't cope, but look at videos of, neglected animals or animals that have been caught in disasters and go, oh my God, that poor koala on, and then go, oh, that's awful. And then don't do anything. But with this, we have the opportunity to change it before it happens.
Absolutely. And look, we're going to be saving human lives.
Yeah, of course.
This also supports farmers because sometimes, I've seen it like in Edgecombe, farmers weren't allowed back in to attend their stocks. And, people would say, oh, they're not drowning, so the stock's okay. And it's like, well no, because
what are they eating?
When you've got a dairy herd that's in contaminated water, its hooves are going to start to rot.
Yeah, of course.
It's going to have mastitis. It's going to dry up.
Yeah.
And so it affects not just the animal welfare of farm animals, but also the farmers' livelihoods.
Absolutely.
And, I certainly, challenge the notion that farmers, don't have emotional attachments, to their animals. By large and whole, they do.
Mm.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be getting so worked up why their animals are sitting in flood water and they can't get to them. So, we want to improve, those groups such as farmers having better protections to ensure that their animals are seen as a priority as well.
Yeah.
Because the only difference is that someone signed a piece of paper to say that there's a declared emergency. Prior to that, they could have driven their tractor through and done whatever they needed to do. So it's about taking not just companion animals, but all animals in New Zealand deserve better protections in disaster. And look, we're a small country. We're really usually quite proud of what we can achieve. And it's not going to take much for everyday New Zealanders just to say what they think. Because a lot of New Zealanders think, oh, but we've already got these laws, haven't we? And it's like, actually,
no,
we don't.
I didn't know. Giving $3 to a cause is all very well, but you're not really changing the world, are you? That's great. And charity is so important.
Yeah.
And whatever you're into, but that actually moving something. I've noticed actually lately, Steve, when I've asked people, how do you feel about the election, right?
Mm.
And most people have gone, I don't know what's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And then there are people that are like, I won't vote for this because it's never going to happen. And so there's part of, not all of us, but there's part of a lot of us that goes, well, I could write this, but is anyone going to read it? Is anyone going to look at it? Mm. Is it important what we write, or is it important that it goes some, do you know what I mean? Is it important that it gets there? Is it the mass of it that makes...
Well, look, it's a really good question because there was a ministerial review on civil defence. It called for public submissions. And when I was CEO of Wellington SPCA, I made quite a large submission about improving animals in disasters. That process had 10% of the submissions made, 10% were about protecting animals in disasters.
Wow.
But guess what?
What?
It wasn't in any of the recommendations. It was put as an annex at the back, out of scope. We had that opportunity there. We had the National Disaster Resilience Strategy. And again, I used to work for that very agency in its previous form, and no one hardly anyone writes in a submission about the National Disaster Resilience Strategy. It's not very...
No?
It's not as long people...
It's not really sexy.
It's not sexy.
No, it's not sexy.
So, you know, I know that we created, you know, historic levels of public submissions for any of the civil defence strategies because of people wanted to see animals in there.
Yeah.
Was anything done? No.
No.
So we're now, I'm thinking third time lucky.
but this is, this it's is war, war of attrition. The more we have, the more that we do. Mm. Like, I mean, I could get on there, and I will. It doesn't really matter. Well, it does matter what I say and what I think. But I think perhaps, I feel perhaps, the mass amounts of submissions that they get, if all of us do it, then they're going to have to go, well, I don't need to read it. We've got, you know, 1 million, yes. 1 million people telling us we need to do this.
And if we're calling for an accountable government that's going to listen to the people, well,
yeah.
and given that the select committee will convene after the election, this will be one of the first points of business for government.
Yeah,
it will be really reflective of a government that is committed to democracy and listening to its people. And this will be, this for me, will be a really litmus test
yes.
for government, saying, are we really genuine about asking for what do our people, what do our communities value, and will we act on that? And I'm hopeful that they are.
Yeah.
I mean, Animal Evac, we're a charity, we've got no staff, we've got no big properties, and we've actually decided that this is it. This is our time to make the change, if there was ever the time.
Mm.
So literally, we have emptied out our bank account.
Really?
And we've put all our money into this campaign because it's now or never. Because if we can't get the change, but if we do make this change, it will be a legacy that we will leave for animals and people for generations to come and for other countries to follow. And so it's a legacy well worth risking.
Absolutely. I'm still annoyed. There's a part of my brain that's very annoyed that you wrote that giant submission and clearly nobody read it.
Well, I'm sort of hoping that we'll have great champions like you that will also tick the box saying, know what, I want to come to select committee and I want to give my 5 minutes of what I think.
So is that what happens? How do you actually get to be there?
Well, yeah, it's actually not too much of a daunting process. On our website has got the link through to the select committee. It's the Parliament GOVT website.
Right.
You basically put in your submission of what your thoughts are, and you can indicate on that submission whether you'd like to be invited to give an oral presentation.
I wonder if they'd let me. They'd probably be terrified.
Oh, it would be rude not to, Polly.
Well, it would be, but they'd probably be a little bit terrified. Oh my God, what is she going to say? And she's quite good at saying things, you know. I think I might do that.
That would be great, because I think this is the thing, is we get more people just to say this is an important issue.
Mm.
I mean, this is about doing the right thing. This sits with so much of our Kiwi values, doesn't
yeah.
it? It's just like we always do the right thing. We love our animals.
We do, and we've got
we're world leading.
And the thing is that we have to adjust our brains to not just feeling bad for the animals once the disaster has happened. We have to put our thought and emphasis on what we can do to prevent seeing those pictures, to prevent all of the heartache.
And if you look, there'll be thousands of animals, particular, in like poultry facilities within stock that would have been killed in the recent events.
Oh my God!
And so, look, you're absolutely right. Look, we took a team to the New South Wales bushfires in 2020.
Yeah.
And I mean that was really quite horrific. I mean, 3 billion animals died in that.
Sorry.
And 3 billion animals died. It's one of the largest.
3 billion animals died.
Billion.
Holy shit, excuse me.
It's a lot, right?
3 billion animals died.
3 billion. It's probably one of the largest level events probably since the Ice Age.
I just got shivers.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, and I feel bad that I didn't know that.
Yeah. And again, so, you know, for us, we went over there, and look, we would have probably helped maybe up to, in all reality, 100 animals.
Yeah.
And you look at the cost that goes into that response.
Mm.
Now, yes, we helped 100 animals and all those animal lives are precious.
Yeah.
But imagine if, you know, we've got the ability, for example, Edgecombe.
Yeah.
What if we weren't in that position in the first place? What if we didn't have 1 in 5 households losing a family member because we had better protections, better plans, better arrangements to prevent that? And a lot of that mitigation to to not be that ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, is about also encouraging personal responsibility. Yeah. So having a plan. So, you know, the research we did with Edgecombe, those that had a plan were twice as likely to have animals survive.
I don't have a plan. I don't have a plan. I'm admitting it. I don't have a freaking plan.
And look, most people don't.
I feel terrible now. I'm already feeling terrible enough that I'm moving my animals and they freak. My dog is just, she won't come out from under the covers. You know, they sense things. And, the anxiety.
That's a really good point, because one of the things we found in the Edgecombe research is one of the reasons why animals got left behind.
Of course.
They couldn't find them in time.
Yeah.
So when we have those heavy rain warnings, those flood alerts, etc., if there's any inkling that, that's a really good cue to say, okay, let's bring my animals inside.
Yeah.
Have them ready. Mm. Check our supplies. And look, when we find people that have got multiple pets, let's say someone's got three or four cats.
Yeah.
They'll often only have one or two cat carriers, right? Because only one or two get sick to go to the vet at any one time. So the more animals you own, the more logistically difficult it is to evacuate. So those people are more vulnerable and more prone to not evacuate because of the logistics involved.
Of course.
So making sure that people have got a leash and a muzzle for all their dogs.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a muzzle, that takes away the excuse of, oh, it could bite someone in the bus or in the boat. And if you've got a pet carrier for each. But that also requires people to have the financial means.
Well, that's
have
right.
Those.
Yeah.
And you know, a simple way, if you don't have something in an emergency for small animals like cats, is a pillowcase.
Oh, really?
A pillowcase. As simple as that. There was a story that there was a lady in the survey we did for Edgecombe, and there was a few things that really just etched into my mind. But it was a lady who, she had escaped the torrent of water coming through, damaging her house. She managed to get out in the nick of time, but she got her cat and she was so relieved that she had got out with just her cat.
Yeah.
But as she was driving out of the township, she was driving out on the open road. The cat wasn't restrained.
No, and the cats
and
the cars.
And it got out the window.
Oh my God.
Which is driving at 100 kilometres.
No.
And it was killed.
Oh
and
no.
And she was having nightmares.
Of course she was.
From it. So
yeah, cats and those, cars. Yeah.
Those experiences, a pillowcase.
Yeah, of course.
So it comes back to good planning, good laws, good preparation. You know, there are simple things that we can do now today that can make a world of difference tomorrow should those events arise.
Well, you've changed my life in two ways. So first of all, I'm going to go on to No Animal Left Behind. No Animals Left Behind.
No Animal Left Behind.
No Animal Left Behind. I'm going to make a submission. I'm going to say I'd like to speak at the select committee. But also, on my way home, I'm going to go and buy another pet carrier, because I only have one. I have a small dog and a cat, both similar sizes. And I'm going to get a muzzle. I'm going to make sure I have a plan. Because I mean, I think I'm a fairly responsible person. Don't have a plan.
Yeah, and what happens if you can't get home?
Yeah, what happens if I can't get home?
So what's the plan there? Do you have neighbours or friends that could come in? Is there a plan for someone that can go in? I mean, these are good questions.
Ooh.
Because, I mean, even in Edgecombe, you know, there were people that were working at the Fonterra plant, and when it all unfolded, it's not because they wanted to leave the animals behind.
No, they just couldn't get
there. They just couldn't get back. So, you know, it's about having those plans that work with, you know, neighbours or friends, etc. But we know that there's always going to probably be some animals left behind.
Yeah.
And so we've got to have agencies that are funded,
absolutely,
mandated and supported to do that, so they're not put in that horrible position.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not blaming you for my anxiety going more through the roof than it already is moving, but my anxiety is about at a 9 out of 10 right now, because I need to have a plan.
Yeah.
I mean, I need to have any plan in my life would be a start, but this is incredible, and I think you've made a lot of us think about this. There'll be a lot, and I know it's probably you thinking right now, I don't have a plan either, Polly, but we need one, don't we? And we need to get, and we need to, exactly what Steve was saying is, we need to make that submission, and the numbers, I believe the numbers count. Because what do they say? So. Don't read your publicity, weigh it. So weigh the numbers of people making submissions.
Well, I'm really interested to see what happens at the select committee and what happens after the select committee. And I know that there's a number of broadcasters like yourself that are saying, well, let's check in and see, you know, do the voices of people count.
Yeah.
And I think they will, because ultimately, you know, as guardians of these animals, they don't have a vote.
They don't
have a voice. So unless we're prepared to do it for them, because, you know, they're prepared to go to great lengths for us. I think of my dog, and it's just like, if there's one thing we can do for them after, you know, for them to be playing such important roles in our lives, I think it's the least that we can do in terms of that sort of moral obligation.
Absolutely. So direct a simple instruction to get it done. No animal left behind. .co.nz?
Or just .nz.
Just .nz just, now?
Yeah,
okay, just .nz. Okay, get rid of the co. That's like me. School. I'm Polly at rover.nz. What happened to the co?
Oh, I think there was, you know, budget limitations.
Yeah. Oh, I hope that is. That's probably why I've only got Polly at rover.nz. And we'll get on there, make our submissions, and if you want to be a speaker at the select committee, come with me.
That is a great idea. And talk to your local MPs or your those that are standing. It's a great time to ask that sort of question, is what's their position? What are they going to be doing to support
That's going to baffle approach? Them.
And look, in terms of writing a plan, also on that website, under resources is a pet owner's preparedness guide. There's also one there for horse owners about getting disaster prepared for horse owners. So,
because horsey people are really horsey people.
They are.
I'm not a horsey person, but horsey people... absolutely. And, I've, again, seen stories of things that happen to people's, and they love their horses.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, there was a lady in Edgecombe, she actually featured on News Hub the other night, and, you know, she was told, no, she can't go into Edgecombe to get to a horse. But she went in and she swam in and got her horses.
That's what I mean, horse people.
So, you know, we know that this is the likely behaviour, not necessarily the correct behaviour,
no,
but it's the likely behaviour. And there was a really good emergency management disaster scholar who said emergency plans need to be based on likely behaviour, not correct behaviour.
Yes, absolutely. I've admitted it. I haven't until this moment even really thought about it, which is awful. I don't know. I just expect everything to just, life to just happen.
We've got day-to-day crises that we're managing, right? Yeah. So we're all going through sort of struggles on a day-to-day basis. But I think, thanks to you and others that are, you know, giving this some visibility, that preparedness will save hundreds if not thousands of animals' lives.
And people's hearts. And
I think of the Hutt Valley here. You know, that's the most densely populated floodplain in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And you look at Edgecombe. I mean, Edgecombe is, 600 households. It's not very big. And that consumed all the national resources we could muster.
That's right.
To rescue those 1,000 or so animals left behind in Edgecombe. So just imagine what happens if we've got the Hutt Valley that has a similar situation. We're going to need more resources. We need to have organisations like FENS given the support, the resources, the mandate, the equipment so that they can actually carry out those rescues. Because it doesn't make sense having a boat that goes out and says, we're only here for this species today.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got to have that one rescue and we get all the family out at the same time.
You know, and as we've seen on the East Coast and in Auckland, things can happen really quickly. Very, very quickly. And we do need to be prepared. We absolutely need to be prepared. Thank you, Dr. Steve Glassy, Animal Evac. Well, we've been schooled today. I really hope they let me speak at the select committee. I don't think they will. But I'm going to tick the box. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you so much. You're an amazing human. You too. Thank you so much.
Almost as good as a dog, but no. Thanks, Steve.